So the time is now 11:20, time to resume the hearing. So as I said before the adjournment, what I'd like to do is to understand some of the basic concepts, principles relating to the air quality issues as regards this proposal, and in particular the effects on ecology. I think what I'd suggest is that rather than me getting into detailed questions to start with, I'd like the applicant to provide that overview to start with, and then we'll move on to the more detailed matters in response to that presentation.
Okay, so it's Julian Boswell, Burgess Salmon, on behalf of the applicant. On my right, sir, is Mrs. Fiona Prismall, P-R-I-S-M-A-L-L, and she's a technical director with RPS. She can explain a bit more about her professional background, and she is the air quality lead on this and the principal author of the air quality chapter. And then her equivalent on the ecology side is Dr. Nick Betson, who's two along, who's spoken earlier, who's the ecology lead also at RPS. So I think I'm going to hand over to Mrs. Prismall.
Thank you.
Good morning, sir. I just might assist you to understand my professional background. I've got an honours degree in pure mathematics, a master's degree in applied meteorology. I'm a chartered environmentalist and a member of the Institute of Air Quality Management. So you asked for an overview and for me to explain some of the terms, so I'll try and do that. In terms of the approach to an air quality assessment, the significance of effect is generally described in relation to two factors, the first factor being the change in concentration attributable to the project, and the second factor is the pollutant concentration that would arise if the project proceeded. So we call that the absolute concentration. The terms that you asked to be described, the ambient concentration, which we've called the AC at various points in the report, that's the background concentration. So it's the concentration that is there now, and it would be there if the project did not proceed. And in this particular case, we've looked at a number of different sources to try and characterise it appropriately for this development. We've looked at some DEFRA mapped, they're 1 kilometre grid squares of data that are produced by interpolating modelled and monitored data. And then we've also looked at some continuous automatic data, continuously automatically monitored data, and then we've looked at some passively monitored data. The pollutants that we've looked at are nitrogen dioxide and carbon monoxide, but it's really the nitrogen dioxide that's the key issue in this particular case. And for the ambient concentration in that, for that pollutant, we've taken the average of measurements at a monitor that's 400 metres away, so it is actually very close to the development. I should also point out in using the measurements, that measurement takes into account to some degree the emissions from K1, which is currently operating and has been operating while those measurements have been made. So the first of the two factors that I described in determining significance, one is the PC, which is the process contribution. We've used an atmospheric dispersion model, which is agreed to be suitable for purpose. It's called ADMS. We use that to predict ground level pollutant concentrations at human health receptors as well as ecological sites. And then the absolute concentration, the PEC, predicted environmental concentration in the report, that's the concentration once the process contribution from the development has been added to the ambient concentration. In terms of ecology, the air quality team modeller will assess the change in pollutant concentration and deposition rates, and that we term to be the impact. But as we're not ecological specialists, we then pass that information to an ecologist who has an understanding of the sensitivity of the habitats that is experiencing that change. So they then are able to describe the effect using the data that we provide to them.
That's fine. Okay. And a basic question, just in terms of the measurement, it's done in micrograms per cubic metre.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So then, moving on from that, the ES talks about the conversion rates of the oxides of nitrogen just to NO2. So it's a 70% conversion rate for annual average concentrations and 35% for hourly mean concentrations. Could you take me through that sort of principle a bit more, please?
The emissions are expressed in terms of total nitrogen oxide. So that's nitric oxide, which is the chemical symbol is NO in the report, and nitrogen dioxide. It's the nitrogen dioxide that is a critical issue for human health. The nitric oxide, however, can be oxidized through a reaction with ozone to produce nitrogen dioxide. So that's 70% for the annual mean, and the 35% for the hourly mean is our conversion factors that have been established by the Environment Agency for use in application permit applications as being an appropriate determination of the proportion of nitrogen dioxide in the total nitrogen oxides that has been modelled.
So then if we move on to the objectives for the measures, let me just get the appropriate chapter of the ES.
So I think you want chapter 5, table 5.1.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, can you tell me through that, please?
The EU in its directive sets limit values for air quality, and the UK and member states of the EU are required to transpose those limit values into regulations. And in this case, the UK has transposed the EU limit values using identical numerical values. There may be some difference in the attainment dates, but the numerical values are exactly the same. So for the key pollutant in this case, the UK provides an objective to meet an annual average of 40 micrograms per meter cubed. And that date was to have been met. That has passed. It was 2010, so it applies now in every single year going forward. And then the second objective for this key pollutant is to not exceed 200 micrograms per metre cubed in more than 18 hours in a calendar year. And carbon monoxide and particulate matter similarly have objectives.
So it's 18 hours.
Yes. Yeah. So it's the 19th hour that's important.
Okay, thank you. And from that, we get the 99.79%.
That's right. That's the assessment. Yes. You divide 8,760 hours.
Yeah. Okay, well, while we're on the air quality chapter, I've got a couple of questions from that before we move on to the more specific ecological issues. So, table 5.11. So, the short-term concentration there is double the long-term concentration. Can you explain why that is, please?
That's an approach that the Environment Agency recommends, again, for permit applications to determine the short-term. The other option is to use the results of measurements, but in order to get an hourly measurement, you'd need a very close continuous automatic monitor which produced a concentration in every hour, and that's simply not available in this location. But the Environment Agency advocates, in the absence of a measured and hourly mean concentration, to double the annual mean concentration.
Okay, thank you. So again, just thinking about that, the long-term concentration, 31.7, that comes from the site SW77.
That's right, that's monitored. 400 metres to the west,
Yeah. And just so I can rationalise this, you say that it's recommended by the EA to double the figure, but why? So long term is 31 micrograms. Yeah. Firstly, why do you need to differentiate between long term and short term?
The concentration in each hour can vary widely, but effectively that variation is smoothed out when you take an annual average of the 8,760 hours in a year.
Okay. So the short term being higher means that you're looking at the peaks.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So then moving on to table 5.15, the sensitivity of the surrounding area for demolition, earthworks and construction. So the reference here is to appendix 5.3, table A6 for ecology. I think that's 5.4, isn't it, anyway, that table, which is the appendix. Air quality assessment of ecological impacts is 5.4. Yeah.
5.4. Yes. Yeah.
So table A6. Yeah, that was my question. I can't see a table A6.
Oh right, sorry. It's appendix 5. Yeah, I think that's a typographical error. We haven't spotted that, I'm afraid. Sorry about that. So that's referring to appendix 5.2. We'll correct that.
And appendix 5.2 is the construction dust assessment methodology.
That's correct. Yeah. It's slightly different.
That's fine,
very different from the operation. Yeah.
So can you explain to me the sensitivity and how that is assessed in this case? It's low for all three categories, dust, soiling, human health and ecology, but it's the ecology I'm most interested in. How is that sensitivity determined?
There is no formal guidance. This is an IAQM methodology for assessing the risk of dust impacts. For ecology, a top-down approach has been used. So for European sites, they've been given a greater importance than a local designated site. So it reduces, and it's been derived with a professional judgment, in using professional judgment, as I say, in the absence of any specific guidance on determining the sensitivity in the area for dust on ecological receptors.
But its sensitivity is low, yet the context is a number of European sites. How was that professional judgment? How did it come to that conclusion?
It takes into account the distance between the features and the source of the dust. If we're talking about construction, then we're talking about larger particles of dust which drop under gravity from the atmosphere very quickly compared to the particulates that might be from a car engine. So.
Yeah, okay. So then can you take me, help me with table 5.18? So then we're moving on to look at the operational effects, short-term impacts. So again, concentrating on nitrogen dioxide, working across the table. So the air quality assessment level is 200, which I've got that. The maximum PC, so we've got two figures for the different stack.
So the two locations,
Yeah. So, again, how are they determined?
So the maximum PC is the contribution that K4 makes to ground level concentrations, and that is the output from the modelling work.
And then the max PC as a percentage, that's rounded up.
That's rounded to, it's to the nearest integer, which is in line with practice. And the figure that it would be compared with is 10%. If it was greater than 10%, it would be considered potentially significant and further work would be needed. But in this case, it's 2%, so it's well below that 10%.
And then the max PEC?
So the max PEC is the sum of the ambient concentration And the modelled K2, K3 and K4.
Yes. So then the impact descriptor, how is that derived?
In the case of the short term, the impact descriptor is negligible because the PC as a percentage of the air quality assessment level in this case is less than 10%.
Right. Thank you. And then that's described in paragraphs 5.6.14. 2% increase in concentration is negligible. Is that the assessment on human receptors and ecology?
No. That is across a grid of receptors, which is indicative of human health receptors. The reason that it's not appropriate to use that to decide on whether there's an effect on ecology is that you would need to take into account the sensitivity of the habitat, so the habitat's response to additional nitrogen. So yes. This is purely human health receptors.
Thank you. So then moving on to table 5.21. So that's similar to the previous table we'd looked at, but it's the calculations here I couldn't quite understand. How is the PEC calculated?
So the PEC is the sum of the ambient concentration plus the PC that's in this table, but that PEC also includes contributions from K2 and K3, which have been explicitly included in the model.
So it isn't, I was expecting it to be 31.7.
Plus 5.8.
Plus 0.58, so that comes to 32.2.
Yeah, so there's an additional contribution because we have conservatively included K2, which is understood now to be decommissioned in the future, and also we've included K3 in that value to give a conservative total concentration.
So you've rounded that up then to 33?
It's not rounded up, it's those other sources have been included in the model and quantified.
So, but why is it not 32?
Because the PC shown in the table is K4.
Yeah.
And then the PEC is K4 plus the ambient plus K2 contribution plus K3 contribution.
So where is the K2 and K3 contribution?
Those contributions aren't shown, the reason being that the significance of effect is calculated with consideration of the project's contribution and the absolute concentration.
Okay, so the simple sum of the AC and the PC, so it would have been 31.7 and 0.58, it's more complex than that?
Yes, yeah.
And is that set out in text?
It's the scenarios are explained earlier at 5.3.37, and then there's some discussion above that table again. So it says the in 5.6.20 it says the PEC is K4PC. Added to the background and the model contributions from K2 and K3.
I see, yes, thank you. And then staying with table 5.21, the impact descriptor is negligible or slight. Can you relate that back to me, please, in relation to table 5.5? Or is it not?
No, it is 5.5. That's quite correct. So there's a 1% change for the if we take the first location, and then the maximum PEC is 33. So that falls into the 76% to 94% of the air quality assessment, which is the second row of the table that you're looking at the moment.
Okay.
So that's negligible.
Yeah.
And then for the second location, it goes to 2, so it moves to the right.
Yes.
So that's slight.
Okay, understand that. Thank you. So then moving on to paragraph 5.6.32. So it says the maximum predicted annual mean nitrogen dioxide PEC for K1, 2, 3 and 4 is 32 micrograms, 82% of the air quality assessment level. So presume that it's 82% of 40. The 30 is the 82% of 40, yes?
Yes.
Okay. So again, just going back to table 5.21, the figure there is 83%, so is that something different?
Yeah, so as the report progresses, that table that you're looking at, 5.21, is the maximum across the grid, and then the subsequent table is modelled concentrations at sensitive receptors. And then this section that you're looking at here, from which you've chosen the paragraph, is looking at the effects when K4 is being commissioned, at which point K1 and K4 will run for a matter of months simultaneously. So we have done some additional modelling, which will be hopefully even more robust, because K1 is already included in the ambient to some extent, but this time we're actually modelling it as well. So we've looked at the maximum concentration at the sensitive receptors in the paragraph that you're looking at, 5.6.32. So that 32.9 is the prediction at sensitive receptor number 2, which was the maximum location of maximum impact.
And is that sensitive receptor number 2 shown in the table?
It's listed.
That's the previous one, isn't it?
Yes.
5.22.
Yes, that's right.
Actually, is that right? Because that's... So looking at maximum predicted PEC at 32.5... Yes, it is, isn't it?
Yes, so it's gone
the
up from 32.
Point,
that's right, from 32.5 to 32.9. Yeah.
Good, thank you. Good. I think that's the basics of the air quality dealt with, and probably now moving on to the more specific ecology matters. And I think at this point, it's probably referring to Appendix 5.4, the revised Appendix 5.4. Which is document rep 2011. And as I said earlier, the context of this is the relevant representation from Natural England, which said that they required further information on calculations of PC and PEC. So there have been some changes to this, which I think I've pretty much identified what they are, but again, going through it would be helpful. But before I do that, perhaps again an overview of what this says in simple terms, so that I can understand it, and I'll respond with any further questions I've got that
okay.
might be helpful.
Yeah. So the key issues are for ecological sites are the NOx concentration. There's a critical level of 30 micrograms per metre cubed that applies to vegetation. Mm. That is a critical level, and it applies no matter what the habitat. It's not dependent on the habitat. There are also critical loads that need to be considered, and in this case, the critical loads are for nutrient nitrogen deposition and for acid deposition, and they vary according to the habitat. Which my colleague, Dr. Nick Betson, I'm sure will explain to you. It relates to the plant itself. Using the modelling, the output of the model for nitrogen oxides, we can use those to compare with the critical level. That's quite straightforward. In terms of the deposition, we apply calculations provided by the Environment Agency, which use deposition velocities, and then there are various conversions for units and proportion of nitrogen within that deposition to derive a deposition rate, which is then compared with the critical load for each habitat.
So that's the second page where the heading is critical loads, nutrients, nitrogen deposition. So, as you say, their deposition rates have been calculated using empirical methods recommended by the Environment Agency. And I'm not going to try and understand or ask questions about those. Other than if I need to, I can check with the Environment Agency if they're happy. So, okay, so the critical load, 30 microgram standard, comes from the Environment Agency.
The critical level.
Critical levels.
Yes, the 30 micrograms per meter cube.
And are these related to the limit values in Table 5.1?
No, the limit values in 5.1 are for human health. The critical level of NOx of 30 micrograms, however, has been transposed into UK regulations for vegetation.
So 5.1 doesn't include NOx, but that's addressed how?
Sorry, I agree, the 5.1 doesn't include the vegetation.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, because it's only addressing human health.
In the main chapter, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. And then, is nutrient nitrogen different from NOx?
Yes, it is. It's the deposition of nitrogen onto leaf surfaces and soils. So it involves that calculation provided by the Environment Agency.
So looking at Table C1, so you've got the critical load there specified as 30 micrograms. Does that take account of the ambient concentration and the predicted, the PEC?
No. In this case, the two columns to the right of critical level are the process contribution, and the process contribution is a proportion of the critical level. And because, for the three rows 2 to 4, they're less than 1%, so they've been screened out according to the criteria. And then we've discussed that at the end. The PEC has been discussed in the text following all the tables. It doesn't have a number, but it adds to the ambient concentration in the discussion at the end.
So coming on to the conclusions then, can you explain, please, the 47% figure? So the PEC is 14.2 micrograms, which is only 47% of critical level.
Yeah, so the PC that has been calculated by the model has been added to the ambient concentration of 12.3. This is the point of the maximum impact across the site. And then the total PEC, predicted environmental concentration, is then 14.2. And in this case, we're looking at a critical level of 30, so it's just under half, and in fact, it's 47% of the 30 microgram critical level.
Okay. Okay, thank you. So then I want to just turn to document Rep 2030, which is the response to the written questions. So I've got a few follow-up questions to the answers that's given there. So the first one is question 1.2.3. This is the downwash effect on buildings. And there's a reference there to paragraph 5.3.33 of the ES and table 5.2. So 5.3.33 says, where building heights are greater than about 30 to 40% of stack height, downwash effects can be significant. So then, if we look at the stack height is 70 metres, so 30% of that would be about 21 metres. So only the HRSG building would be subject to ground to downwash effects. Is that correct?
And the turbine hall's more than 21 as well.
Oh, yes, yeah. So that's height 16.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Beg your pardon, sir.
So just the HRSG then. So how are those effects assessed? How have they been taken into account?
There's a module within the model that allows you to put in the dimensions of buildings. And when you run the model in conjunction with the meteorological data, it can take into account the downwash within its algorithms.
I won't probe algorithms today. okay, so it's modelled.
Yes.
And what's the conclusion?
Well, the conclusion is the predictive concentrations. It takes it into account when it produces those predictions.
Right. Okay. Okay, so now moving on to question 1.2.4. So this is really getting into the ecology area. So there's the response there, the second page. It says, in relation to the four nationally designated sites, starts with Swale, and that Swale Marine Conservation Zone. The second one is the Swale SSSI. It says these are additional habitats listed for the SSSI. However, the critical loads are already assessed in the ES. Could someone explain where that is, please?
So in Table C2 of Appendix 5.4, the Swale SPA is already included in that. So what we're saying is that the boundary is identical and the habitats within that are already shown in that table.
And then Q1.2.5, I think the questions I'm asking really just for confirmation that I've got things right. So the PC for K3 is it's a modelled PC.
That's correct.
Yeah. And then the hourly rate, nitrogen dioxide, 99.79 centile. The 19th highest hourly mean concentration is because that is beyond the what's the assessment level?
The objective is to not exceed...
It's 18 current.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, yeah. So that's fine. Okay, so then looking at the ends of the ends of the answer there, it says reference is made back to paragraphs 5.6.33 and 5.6.34, which we had looked at earlier. This is the maximum predicted annual mean, and should have asked this earlier actually, but the 82% of the air quality assessment level, isn't that above the 70% critical threshold?
That 70% that you're talking about is for ecological receptors, but this is nitrogen dioxide and it's human health receptors.
So 70% is for ecological receptors.
So the question here is whether or not it exceeds the air quality assessment level in 5.6.32.
Okay, so it's compared to the
40 micrograms, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so it's not comparing with 70%.
That's right, yeah.
Thank you. So again, by the same token, then the answer to Q1.2.6, the second page, where it's said the annual mean NO2 for permitted K3 is higher than the upgraded K3. Goes on to say the new PEC is 34.3 micrograms, only 86% of the AQAL. So again, that's fine because it's not the 70% as relevant
here. Yeah, that's right.
Here.
It's the 40 micrograms,
yeah.
And it's
okay. I think I'm getting there. So I think that probably covers all the questions I had then on air quality. So, Dr. Betson, you were let off scot-free there.
Thank you.
But, so there are certainly all the detailed questions. One other thing I just want to put in is, I suppose this is a general question as well. It's not just related to air quality. It has wider implications. But the cumulative assessment for the project has included various other schemes and proposals, and it did include K3. Now, as it's in the public domain, we have the Wheelabrator Kemsley North scheme, which was formerly K5. How have those effects, or are those effects being taken into account? Should they be taken into account, I suppose, is the first question, because that is an evolving scheme. And should it relate to all topics in terms of potential cumulative effects? Clearly, it wasn't done initially because, or it was done a different way initially when the application was submitted. because that scheme hadn't developed, but now it's getting to a certain stage. Is that something that needs to be taken account of? Mr. Boswell?
Sir, I think it's right to say that that scheme has submitted a scoping request.
Yes.
I think it might be best if we respond if we respond separately on that. Scoping reports only ever give you so much information, so on something like air quality,
yes,
there won't be the kind of information that you could meaningfully do a cumulative assessment on.
Yes.
And I think there would be a similar theme on quite a number of other topics.
Yes.
I think there becomes a fairly obvious challenge when you're at this stage on this type of application and something like that pops up, which you've got no control over, because the applicant here has absolutely no involvement whatsoever in that scheme.
Yep.
So unlike K3, where there is involvement in the sense that Dear Smith is a customer of K3 to receive some of the heat, there's no connection at all with the other project you've just mentioned. So can we reflect on that
and
let you know what we think the appropriate point is? Or you framed it as a question. I guess you might have taken a different tack and said, I need XYZ from you, and I'm not sure whether you're able to give us any steer as to your thinking on how it should be dealt with.
My thinking, and the reason for asking the question, is that it's now in public domain.
Yeah.
And therefore, my question is an open one. Should it be considered alongside all the other projects that were considered as part of the cumulative effects? Now, your initial response to that has already given me a steer anyway, because you're saying it's scoping, so level of detail is not, certainly wouldn't be as detailed as some of those other cumulative, potential cumulative effects from other projects, which have, in some cases, may already have planning permission. So we're dealing with things at different stages.
Exactly.
But clearly, because it's now in the public domain, I need to at least make reference to it. And any pointers you can give me to what your position is would be helpful. So
yes, and just to draw out the point that you've just made, given how far in advance we are and close to a determination for a project to pop up at an early stage, whilst I've no reason to imagine it won't proceed, I've been involved in plenty of projects that haven't proceeded or have taken much longer than they had originally been announced at. Mm. Inevitably, in a decision like this, your recommendation and the Secretary of State's decision, it would be pretty extraordinary. You know, we are so far ahead of that project that the existence of that project could never realistically call into question our project, and any cumulative issues that it did give rise to would clearly be overwhelmingly a matter for that project rather than this one.
Yes, understand. Thank you.
So we will endeavour to assist you on that in our submissions.
Thank you. So I think that concludes item 2, which is the table of issues and questions. Is there anything else that anyone wishes to say on that matter before we move on? Thank you. So item 3 is review of issues and actions arising. So there are clearly a number of actions there, and I think, as before, a written submission of the oral presentation would be most helpful for today. A couple of other elements emerging from that, such as that last point about the further scheme locally. There are some other issues I'd just like to pick up which arose from the accompanied site inspection yesterday, which ideally, if I could have responses by D3, but if not, D4 would be fine. But please respond on that. So most of these were mentioned yesterday anyway, but for the record, I'll repeat them. So firstly, a plan showing the location of the new access road and details of any decision on the application by Swale Borough Council. I think it was supposed to go to committee in August. I don't know if that was determined, but yes, Mr.
Sir David Harvey, DHA. Yeah. The decision should be made under delegated powers,
right,
and we understand that it should be made imminently,
okay,
in the next couple of days. We'll provide an update.
Yeah.
Deadline.
Okay. Well, if it's the next couple of days, then the update when it happens, if it happens, will be fine. So that's good. Thank you. I also inquired about the extent of the Sittingbourne and Kemsley Railway within the site. Just mainly curiosity as to where the boundary was and the difference of or what their ownership interest was on the site. It's not vital if there isn't a plan. I'll put it out there. If you can provide something, that would be helpful. Third item was aerial photos of Castle Rough scheduled monument would be helpful, please. And that's it. So Mr. Buzzell, do you want to respond on the timetable for those or anything further?
I think all of those are relatively straightforward. So we would expect to be able to do them for D3, deadline 3.
Thank you. Are there any other matters which I've raised today which need to be on the list? If I missed anything that isn't covered by previous description? No.
Not that we're aware of, sir.
Thank you. Okay, so item 4, next steps. Before I draw the hearing to a close, are there any other matters anyone wishes to address, would like to raise?
Oh, yes. So this ruled me out of order if I'm raising this in the wrong sort of way, but we just thought it might assist you, sir, with the DCO hearing tomorrow if we handed in a sort of fully up-to-date track change version that includes changes that where the detailed wording hasn't otherwise yet gone in, to give you an opportunity to look at it before tomorrow, on the basis that it will assist tomorrow if we're not having to describe wording which is actually pretty minor, and then tell you, and then we can all, yes, see that it's not very important if you've had a chance to sort of to look through it. We think it would assist proceedings, and then ultimately, well, we're happy to submit that, but in practice it will then get overtaken fairly quickly by the next iteration, but we just think it may assist proceedings to give you that. I appreciate that's not on precisely on the topic of this hearing.
I think that sounds like a good way forward. I think procedurally it's acceptable. You probably know the
I've been at many other hearings where things have been handed in. Obviously it's slightly unusual to have literally nobody else represented here, and in some ways that helps, I think, because chances are we're going to get the same tomorrow, would appear to be the indication, and then we can include that for completeness. We can include that in our post-hearing submission,
yes,
for this hearing, if you like, to just say that this was handed in. I suppose everything's formal, really, isn't it? But in,
yes,
a sense, it's informal, just to make tomorrow more efficient, really.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Alternatively,
to
we could hand. It's just it would not. It helps to give you it today because,
yes,
you've got a chance to look,
understand,
at it. Hopefully,
I'm happy to proceed on that basis. Thank you.
Okay,
we'll help.
We'll do that.
If you could give me a copy and anyone else who wants one, but one for case officer as well, please.
Thank you. Yes, will do, sir.
Okay, that's good. Anything else? Good. So, if there's nothing else anyone wishes to raise, then I'd like to thank everyone for their attendance and engagement today, and I'll confirm that the issue-specific hearing is closed at 12:30. Thank you very much.